Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-man, no lames on the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-man, no lames on the track.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined, as always, by JD, by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
I'm okay. A little behind the scenes stuff. Just before we started the show, Mike's microphone was like doing this. It was like watching for my 80s kids out there. It was like watching an old episode of Max Headroom. I'm sure anyone under the age of 30 just went, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah. Look up Max Headroom. That was a wild incident. That was Chicago TV, right?
Well, that was like the fake Max Headroom. Max Headroom was a real show in the 80s. Right. He was the spokesman for New Coke, a reference that I frequently use on this show when talking about AEW. The Max Headroom thing in Chicago, like some random dude interrupted the signals of both WGN TV, the superstation in Chicago, and WTTW, our PBS affiliate. Like he interrupted during the news for WGN and then on Doctor Who. For WTPW. So yeah, it was just a dude with a Max Headroom mask acting really weird and bitching about liberals.
Yeah.
Super surreal. TV super, moment. Super,
yeah. So right literally a minute before we went on the air, my microphone crapped out on me. So I'm talking into my internal computer mic. So if it sounds a bit different, I apologize. If you guys can't hear me in the chat, let me know and I'll have to adjust and I'll just figure something out. But this is what happens when you're live on YouTube, man. You just got to run with it sometimes. And so, but before we get started, I want to give a shout out to the Patreon. JD has been doing some work on the Patreon this week. I have not done anything on Patreon this week.
Picking up your slack, man, which is
funny. I know. I'm always slacking. I was going to do some WWE stuff on Monday, but I just couldn't get to it. In fact, I never ended up watching the NXT show. But I was going to try to do something with Cousin Joe. We just couldn't get the timing right and just wasn't going to work. And then Monday night I was going to record. I just couldn't do it. It just was out of the question Monday night. So
I get it.
But JD, man, killing the town, going strong.
It's supposed to chapter 6 today. It's good. It's keeping me on top of writing it. As we do this right now, by the way, when this show officially hits the airway, the podcast waves, I don't know what you call it. When it hits your feed, it'll be the last day for the Gaijin Kickstarter. So this is it. If you have not backed Gaijin yet, please jump in. Book's not going to be available on Amazon for 6 months. This is the best time to get it. If you haven't yet, this is it. My month-long campaign ends. So, you know, I'll plug it one more time before the show ends. But yeah, man, it's doing Killing the Town on this Patreon has like really inspired me. It's like keeping me on top of things. Like, it's been good. I think I'm going to start sharing the older chapters to my Substack because I gotta nurture my author network. Is one lesson I've learned from this Kickstarter campaign is I kind of let my writer network grow cold a little bit, and I gotta kind of feed that. But this is like, it's a great way to get back at it. To start, it was with you guys on the Patreon, and like, you know, kind of helped me. I've had some good notes from people who have sent me stuff, which is awesome. And I'm real excited for the direction the story is going to take. If you're reading it, keep up. It's about to get crazy. It's a very personal story for me. I'm very happy with where it's going.
Yeah, man. And everybody seems to be pretty happy with it. We've got some pretty good feedback. And so keep it up, man. I'm proud of you. It's good stuff. I myself have done a thing in the last week. I have brought back Affliction t-shirts. as you can tell by my Brace for Impact Affliction shirt right here, I made this shirt. If you go into the YouTube description on this video, or even in, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, it'll be in the description links. Just click the link to the to my Tee Public store. I decided to bring back Affliction shirts. Well, because I lost a bet.
I heard.
And not only did I lose it, I got my ass kicked on this bet. I bet TNA. Well, they didn't accept the bet, but it was more like to my followers. I bet that if I was so sure that TNA would not be able to do 3,000 seats or 3,000 tickets for Slammiversary in Montreal, I was so confident that I said if they did, I would buy a big con T-shirt and wear it. Well, they're closing in on 4,000 tickets out right now. I don't want to say sold because I think they did a lot of giveaways and they did do mass selling of blocks of tickets to some sponsors and stuff like that. But still, for TNA, this is humongous, right? This is a huge house for TNA. And so I'll forever have heat with PCO over the job he did getting boots on the ground and selling his tickets. But so I was like, I went to the TNA merch website and they don't have a Big Con shirt, which makes sense. So I just created my own. I was like, I bet Big Con wears Affliction shirts. And it was a running joke on Brace for Impact that I was going to bring Affliction back one day. So I created a Big Con shirt, put it up on my store and bought it. You can't get it now. I don't want to make money off Big Con's name. But I did tell him, and he knows that I put it out there. And he actually liked my comment that if he wants the design, he can just have it. So, but that is out there. So I will be wearing a Big Con T-shirt for the post show for Slammiversary. So go to my Tee Public store. Head over to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. But I was going to start off talking some AEW, man, but we got a super chat.
Got a super chat.
Our number one hater of all things Triple HGH, Glassdoor Gamer, wants to start off hot today. So we're going to go ahead and get to him. And as always, if you guys want to just stop us in our tracks and screw up our format, you're more than welcome to lay down a super chat.
We'll take it.
Glassdoor Gamer said, Triple H took a shot at AEW pay-per-view length, acted like it wasn't intentional, then proceeds to bury some of their own pay-per-views. What a marble mouth. Yeah. He's not very good at these press conferences, but I don't know that he was too bad on this one.
I listened to our bosses, Joe and Rich, on the flagship today. They had an early flagship. Usually they run the same day that we do. So they are a day ahead of us this week. Joe put it best, or was it Rich? I forget who. He's not corporately trained. Like he doesn't, which is kind of a breath of fresh air a little bit. I don't hate on the guy for not being corporately trained because sometimes you get some realistic answers out of him. Like he's a tremendous asshole. And like, he says stuff like that. It gives you a window into the man's soul. And like, it's so funny to me that people slam, like that is the new legential thing, is they're slamming the length of pay-per-views because making you pay $50 and giving you more content for the money you've paid is somehow a bad thing. And again, yeah. people listen to us aren't going to disagree with me. I wish some WWE geek would show up in the chat right now. Be like, no, man, I get $5 a month so I can get 5 matches and it's the best. So whatever. I mean, like, I like that that when I pay money for a show, $50, that I'm going to get a bunch of matches. Like, I didn't have a problem. People are like, oh, my God, these shows are so long. I'm like, oh, my God, I don't know about you. I'm pretty cheap. Like, if I'm going to spend money on a product, I kind of want to make sure I get my money's worth. And, like, $10 a match is a lot for me, man. That seems like a lot. Yeah. So, like, I know it's a better vibe for me personally. And Triple H is I don't know. He's aiding and abetting a rapist and making jokes about it on his TV show. So, I mean, I don't really go to him for any moral quandaries.
No. And me personally, I wish AEW shows were a bit shorter, but that's because I try to watch the full thing so that way I can do a podcast afterward. And I'm only thinking of myself, and I personally am not paying for these things. So I'm just like, I personally would like them to be shorter, but I understand why they're longer because they're charging $50. They want to make sure that you're getting more than your money's worth. So of course they're gonna charge. Of course they're gonna try to go above and beyond to give you everything. Why not? I'll be honest. When WWE was doing those 6 to 7 hour shows, which is what, and we got a guest coming on. We'll bring him on in a sec. When WWE was doing those 6 to 7 hour shows under the Vince regime, a couple years ago, I was disgusted with those things. I did not want those to be long. But that's just because they were really bad. But because I didn't have a podcast, I was like, I'll just skip it. I won't watch all. They're all just fast forward through and see what I want to see, which is kind of what I do right now for WWE.
So I got a text today from Joe Ziegler. He of Betamax Memories, coming soon to the Mike and Julie Patreon. Yes, he went and saw Horizon today, the new Kevin Costner movie. I haven't seen it yet. I'm one of the vast majority of Americans who haven't seen this movie. His critique was long, boring, couldn't stay for the last 20 minutes. And this is a man that I have seen many a bad movie with. So for him to get up and, well, it's one of the laziest people I know, for him to get up and leave a movie theater really says something about how just because it's longer doesn't mean it's better. Like, dude, I love Forbidden Door. I thought every match on that was a freaking banger. And we do have a guest. He's joining us right now. So we'll kind of, I gave him the format. We'll work him in. I'm going to prep this. This is a guy from the comic world. About a decade plus ago, I read a comic from, and it was about a detective with a brain tumor solving a crime and trying to figure out what's real and what he's kind of imagining. And it was one of the most innovative, creative books I've ever read. And I loved it passionately. And this is a guy I followed on Twitter for a long time who has recently made his way into the wrestling space. And like I said, a big fan of his work, big fan of what he's doing now in wrestling. And I want to welcome onto the Mike and JD show. And that's Joshua Hale Fialkoff, man.
Click the button on StreamYard, add him in. There you go. Hey, man.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome to the show, Joshua.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. And thank you for saying nice words about tumor. It's always nice. I like hearing nice words about it.
Dude, it's an excellent book.
Just so you know, Josh, my mic doesn't always sound like this. My microphone, legit, like minutes before we went on the air, quit on me. So I'm just talking into my computer today. So please don't.
Weirdly, when I went to sign on, I have two cameras because I do live streaming. And the camera that I usually use for everything also would not work. So I'm using like my shitty camera, which is why I look all blown out and weird. So we're doing good. We're doing good together.
Dude, that's how it goes, man. Like shit hits the fan and you just have to kind of wipe it off your face and you just keep moving forward.
You just fight on. That's how it works. Fighting.
Well, thanks, dude. Thanks for joining us. Why don't you tell us a little bit about kind of what you're starting in the wrestling space right now and kind of what got you there?
Yeah, it's weird. It's still weird because it's still relatively new. So I'll tell you guys the true story instead of the story that I tell while I'm making videos. The true story of it is, I don't know if you guys know this, but the entire entertainment industry has completely caved in 100%. It's really sort of amazing. And as I've watched the entire entertainment industry cave in from top to bottom, I've been working for the past 20 years in comics, in video games, in animation, and predominantly as a television writer. And, you know, as things have been sort of just falling to pieces all around me, the thing that I've really found the most solace in as I've watched it all burn has been professional wrestling. You know, I watched it as a little kid. I watched it all the way through the Attitude Era, up through about John Cena. Like once John Cena came, John Cena parallels my move to Los Angeles. I graduated college and I moved out here and I started working in the entertainment industry. And, you know, I like lost freedom of time. I started working literally 20-hour days every single day, 7 days a week, because that's what working in Hollywood is, because despite our unions, they don't actually protect us. And so I sort of fell out of wrestling. And then again, like, because the industry has been so screwed up the past like 3 or 4 years, I fell back into it. So now, you know, once the strike started about a year ago, and now like once the strike ended, work never really came back. And I've been sort of heart sore, to be honest, that I haven't been able to make anything. And I sort of like started thinking to myself, like, what is the like practical application of all of this knowledge that I have about the entertainment industry? And all the things that I'm passionate about, what can I possibly do? Like, what can I take these two things and combine them with? And like, what makes me happy? Like, what is the thing that actually gives me joy? And my wife said to me, I mean, you really like wrestling. Like, you really, really, really like wrestling. And I thought to myself, like, you know, like, nobody talks about wrestling from the point of view of the entertainment industry. Like, nobody talks about it from, you know, a writer's point of view. Nobody talks about it from a producer's point of view. And, you know, and I've been producing and writing television and like live events and doing interactive, like interactive and video games. And like, I've been working in that space at a pretty amazingly high level. Like, when I actually stop and think about it, for 20 years. And it really just sort of all kind of came together that I started. So I started a, you know, a, it started as, you know, a YouTube channel. It's a YouTube channel, an Instagram account. And I had a TikTok, but it got taken down because of AEW, because they're real bastards, it turns out. Who knew? Yeah. I love them so much, and it's, they're so mean. But yeah, so it started, and it's called Wrestling with Story. And I talk about professional wrestling and the news of the day, and I talk about the shows as they air. And I talk about all of them, but instead of just sort of talking about them as a fan, I try and talk about them instead as a writer and as a producer, and what I see as sort of the challenges that they face and the things that they do really well and the things that I take from them and have taken from them in my career, and learned from and like really applied in my work. And it's been like, it's been really remarkable. Like, I've had a ton of fun doing it. It's funny saying it, you know, like, I just worked on, the last TV show I worked on was the Avatar: The Last Airbender Netflix show, which was the most expensive TV show I think ever made. And is also the most streamed show of all time. So I say that before telling you, I just passed 500 subscribers on YouTube, and I was like, yeah. Woohoo! Hey, I'm so excited.
Hey, you know, it took us a while to get to that point. So that's a hell of an accomplishment, because you're starting from the ground up, and a relative unknown in our space. So to get 500 right now, that's pretty freaking
that's
good.
Solid.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I might be lying. I think I'm at like 470 right now. So I'm that's almost fine. At 500, but I'm close.
We were going to let you have it, bro.
Yeah, I know. I felt guilty all of a sudden.
But no, so it's wrestling. You work, man. We lie.
It's true. There's a thousand people just waiting for me right now outside. But no, but it's been really rewarding. And again, like, even though it's not the thing that I'm trained in, and I do weirdly have worked with a bunch of people who've actually been writers in professional wrestling. Because a lot of guys come bounce in and out of the industry, and you end up working in professional wrestling because they love people from Hollywood. So I've actually worked with a bunch of people who've gone out and worked, you know, in Connecticut. But you know, so I have some like slight insider stuff, but I'm really going at it just from the practical stuff. So, you know, the video that I put up today was looking at the problems that AEW has with their ratings. And when I look at them, it's like, well, I can tell you very clearly why their ratings are bad. And it really comes down to like one simple thing. It's really hard to talk to people about actual wrestling. Like, I can talk to you about stories. Like, I can tell you about the Bloodline, and it's pretty fascinating. And you can be like, oh, okay, yeah, like, I want to see what that's about. It's about this, okay, so there's Roman Reigns, and he's got, you know, his whole family has all the, like, when you start talking about it, it's, like, engaging because it's a story. But if I try and tell you about Will Ospreay, who is a fucking god, right? Like, I love him to death, and I think he's amazing. But, like, how do you explain Will Ospreay to somebody in a way that compels them to be like, well, I am going to go sit down now and watch this for a long period of time, who's not already a wrestling fan, who is already watching AEW, right? Like, that's a thing that, like, I don't think personally, like, I've never seen people talk about that as the problem, but I really do think like that is the core of the problem. That's the kind of stuff that I talk about. That's the kind of stuff that I'm doing. Yeah, that's me. That was a way longer answer.
No, that's cool. That's really good. That was a really good intro, which is cool because we are voices of wrestling, guys, right? So we come from the smarkiest of the smarks, right? Like that's our fan base. That's who we are. Like, so it's interesting because like, I don't disagree. I think that's kind of what, that is the challenge of AEW is when they created the program, when they created the promotion, they were trying to create something more aimed at the hardcore fan base who was dissatisfied with the WWE product in the latter half of the 20 teens, you know,
right.
You're talking to two of those guys. Like I still don't watch WWE. I don't like the way this show is produced. I think it's too slick. I don't like a lot of the scripted promos. I don't like, cause I don't think wrestlers are very good actors for the most part. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it lands very flat with me. Whereas I watched like the Hangman Page promo that was on social media, not on the goddamn television show. And I'm like, this is what connects with me as a fan is like feeling a person's, like maybe they're not their real feelings, but there's something in there that they're tapping into that I find to be much more emotionally appealing. And I think that they struggle to really showcase what they do differently. And one thing that we've always really harped on for AEW is like, there's a long list. There's a list of bodies of like promotions that have tried to do WWE liked right. and have failed.
Right.
Like nobody can outdo the WWE as far as sports entertainment goes. So one thing I've always said, Mike and I both always say is be different, right? You're never going to be them. Don't try to be them. Be different. Build your base, you know, do it that way. And like, it's so interesting because I think you're right. I think it's so much harder to sell people on, hey man, this wrestling, the wrestling is awesome. You know, which is why I think last night's Dynamite was so good, is I think there was a lot of tangible stuff that you can sell people on.
Yeah. And I think I do agree. Will Ospreay is probably one of my top two or three favorite wrestlers going right now. I think he's a really good promo, but I think his backstory we haven't really dug into yet. And like, what is his why? We don't mm-hmm. exactly know yet. But I think the most compelling television character on AEW right now that I would say challenges any other narrative about the storytelling in AEW is Hangman Adam Page, whom I put on our thumbnail this week with his bloody face screaming into the camera about Swerve Strickland, you know, doing a home invasion on him and threatening his family and the whole backstory there. He ended up not winning last night, which puzzled me.
It was a very weird choice.
I felt like, you know, that's where the story was going. But I still find him to be a compelling character. What are your thoughts on the character of Hangman Adam Page and where he's going with it right now?
My problem with Adam Page is I don't think he's a very good wrestler.
Really?
We were doing so good.
He just sort of doesn't do it for me. I wish he did. I don't know why. There's something about him. Like of all the guys in the Elite, he's the one who I'm sort of like, yeah, he's okay. I think the story with Swerve is really good. I think the problem with the story with Swerve is that, first of all, they explored it really thoroughly, right? Like, so we did that story really well the first time around. And I think when it comes time to do that story again, the question becomes, so what are they going to do that's novel about it? What's the novel version of that story that we would tell today? And so the novel version is now Hangman is the bad guy and Swerve is the good guy. Except for one thing. Swerve's not really a face. And Hangman's not really a heel. Like, they both are sort of tweeners, right? Like, they're both sort of in the middle. So what's that story actually going to be if you do that story again? Right? Like, I think there's like a practical problem to running that story again that makes sense not to do it. Cause as soon as he came back, like it made when it was like, who's going to be the mystery guy. I think like that week might've been even the first time I did a recap episode. I was like, it's obviously Hangman Adam Page, like 100% it's going to be Hangman Adam Page. So like it wasn't a surprise that it was going to be him, but my thing is like those three matches that they did told the story in a very compact, very compelling way, possibly too compactly, right? Like it, but it really had a beginning, middle, and end, and it had sort of a finite point where like the audience decided. The audience decided on Swerve. Mm-hmm. And Hangman wasn't compelling enough as a face to turn the audience, because tell me what Swerve could do worse. Right? Like, yeah. What could Swerve do that is more awful than what he did?
Well, he could have hit his finish on the baby. I think that's probably gonna seal it.
Dude, he did JML driver the shit out of that little kid. I think it's interesting what you're talking about. I think the template that they've been trying to model with this feud is Bret Hart, Steve Austin, because it started out in a very similar spot. You know, in Survivor Series 96, Bret very clearly the heel, Steve Austin very clearly Bret very clearly the face, Steve Austin clearly the heel. But there's something going on. It's not quite there yet, but like it wasn't like people were all on board with Steve Austin in the fall of 96. By their second match, spring 97, the tide is totally shifted, and they do still probably the best executed double turn in history. There are not very many double turns now that I think about it, but like
one of very few. And I think part of the tide that was turning similarly is that Steve Austin also did a home invasion on Brian Pillman.
Very true. And I think there's a lot too. I think what made the, and I think that you'd like to talk about both those characters are tweeners. I think there's the similar here. I think Brett felt very justified in his actions, and his whole storyline was, I haven't changed. You guys have changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And I do feel the same way with Paige here. So I think that it can be, because I'll even argue that there was still meat on the bone to Steve Austin and Bret Hart. And we never quite got all of it, because, you know, stuff that's been litigated a bazillion times, no one needs to go over that again. But I mean, like,
we all got robbed very clearly.
There still could have been stuff there, and maybe I'm just holding out hope, because I really like their chemistry together, and I do think that there's more that could be done there. But they definitely have to steer harder, and I agree with you. I think that I like Swerve Strickland, but I always feel like we're not quite there yet with him. I do feel like as the cliche goes, the title is trying to make him a bit. I'm still a bit. I like him, don't get me wrong, but I still don't feel like he's quite the guy. You know,
they've done him very few favors. I think so. I think the Will Ospreay match was the first time that it was like, oh, there you go. Now he's a world champ. Now he feels like a world champion. I think he just hasn't felt like one. I think that like the first thing he did as champion was fight Kyle Fletcher. And like, listen, I love Kyle Fletcher. I think that guy, if they stop using him as a jobber, he could be, you know, a future world champion. Like, he's amazingly talented. He's got a great look. He's really charming. But that match was, why would you do that? Like, there's no logical storytelling reason. Like, it doesn't put Swerve over. It doesn't make Swerve feel honored. It just makes it felt like a warm-up match, you know? And that's how they introduced him as a champion. Like, it's ridiculous. It's just bad storytelling. And they've made choices like that over and over and over. They keep doing it to him. So I think just the booking in general hasn't done Swerve any favors. And then I think on top of that, the feuds, I love Christian Cage. I think Christian Cage is one of the best heels in wrestling, but that feud was not the right feud. Like, it didn't have legs. It wasn't given time to grow. It wasn't given time to be anything. It was what it was. It was like, this is the guy you're fighting now. This is the guy that you're up against. And what they did that was interesting is the actual feud was against the Elite, right? Like, that's really what that feud was. But the Elite set up the fight and then pissed off. They just had nothing to do with it. And it's like, no, but that's the story. Like, that needs to be the story. That's actually where the conflict is. And then the fact that Christian Cage was just a one-off bad guy doesn't matter, because you're making it about, we're manipulating this, you're not who we want to be in here, and we're going to ruin it for you. You know that, and they're, I think they're getting there. I think they're starting to, like, that's going to become the story ultimately. But even that gets weird, because then what's the story with Bryan Danielson? Like, it's weird. It's a very weird choice. And I loved, I thought yesterday's Dynamite was sensational. Like, mm-hmm. I think it might have been the best episode in months, from top to bottom. Like, it did everything. I shot my episode yesterday about what was wrong with AEW, then watched it, and then was like, oh, I gotta go shoot more. And then I shot an edition where I was like, listen, they actually did a bunch of the things that I talk about in this video, so, you know, yeah, disregard some of it, but hopefully they keep doing that and it actually makes a difference. Because so much, like, it did so much of that stuff right. And I think it did it in a way that, like, to your point of it not feeling like WWE, I think they got the good stuff that WWE does. And I think they did it in a really smart way. But, like, and for me, you know, when I look at what they're doing in a much broader sense, and this has been the other weird part, maybe it's not weird, I suppose I should expect it, but the story that, like, most works for me that they're doing, that I hope that they understand is, like, their best, I genuinely think their best storytelling is the Toni Storm stuff.
Oh yeah.
I think, and the only reason why I'm hesitant about it is the reaction whenever I post anything about it online is, like, uniformly negative.
I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's so polarizing. Like, yeah, in our circles, right, in the smart community circles, we'll call them, people are very against it because it's like specifically our bosses at Voices of Wrestling hate it because it's so sports entertainment. Until last night, everybody seemed to be on board with last night, because that was freaking awesome. Yes. Like, that, yeah, the end of Dynamite last night absolutely ruled. So I get why you're getting that, because, like, the AEW fan base, and I've said this on our show a couple times, is really fractured right now. Like, yeah, if you have, like, you know, guys like us that are, like, Mike and I specifically, that come from, you know, dudes that were watching New Japan, you know, when WWE was bad, and guys that went out of their way to watch Noah. Like, I had a Noah podcast before Mike and I had our show together. So, I mean, like, this is, and then you have they went out of their way to try to lure in some more WWE fans, and it's created this, like, dissatisfaction within fans of the product. Cause I think there's a lot of, they don't know what they are sometimes. Like, you've said a little bit, like, there's some weeks we want to be like the hardcore smart promotion. Some weeks we want to, you know, tell our own bloodline stuff. And it's just like, it creates confusion, I think, sometimes, as to what we've said this on their show a bunch. What is this product? Like, what do we want to be? And I think it's been better lately, but I do think there's a little bit of an identity crisis there.
Yeah, I think the last 2 weeks, they're starting to shore up some of their weaknesses.
I agree.
I would say. And in fact, you said that, or Josh said that, last week was the best episode in months. I think it was the best episode since the previous episode. I think the last 2 weeks have been, like, two of my favorite Dynamites that I've seen in a very long time. It seems like they're starting to hit their stride again. It's not reflecting in the ratings just yet, because I think that's going to take some time. It's going to take some more time of people kind of talking about it, like water cooler talk, and getting more buzz behind them. But I feel like if they keep on with the string of shows and some of that stuff, now are they going to get, you know, back up to, like, close to a million again? I don't think so. I just think with the way the television is going, they're not ever going to get to that point. But I do think they get to, like, a solid place. You're coming up pretty soon as they head into this, to the TV rights negotiation. You know, the title of the episode is AEW is All the Way Back. So clearly I named the episode. Clearly I'm on a high for the last 2 weeks. But I do completely agree with everything you guys are saying. I am one of those guys that shit all over the Toni Storm thing since its inception. So much so, I shit on the Mariah May thing from its inception. I hated it 3 weeks ago, but last night they won me over. I can change. People can change. They rocked me before.
I love it, man.
And I think you're right. I think you're right now, Josh. I'm on your side with this Toni Storm thing.
I love it. You know, and the thing about, because I think Toni Storm is, like, the thing about Toni Storm is when you watch her as a wrestler, even though she's doing this broad, ridiculous character, like take the story out of everything and just, like, looking at her as the character that she's doing. And I come to it with a fairly large bias because my wife writes biographies of movie stars, of 1940s movie stars. So it like, it's like right in my sweet spot, like as a character. But beyond that, the thing about Toni Storm is out of everybody on the roster, every match that she has, the way that she tells stories in those matches, like when she's fighting a local, right? When it's just a like ridiculous filler match on Rampage, she makes the opponent feel like they matter. Like she makes every match have that. And I think that comes from Japan. Like, I think there's a very, very Noah, New Japan feel to it. Stardom, rather, you know, like there is this very, like, she takes the matches and like the one that sticks out to me in particular is there was the tag team match the week before, I think it was like the week before Forbidden Door. And it was Tony and Mariah versus like Lady Frost and who was it? Somebody like another Ring of Honor somebody. And it's a match that like, if it was anybody else, it would just be a total blowout. And instead it was like, maybe she's going to lose. Like it actually feels like there's a chance she might lose this. How is that possible? Cause she actually tells a story and she actually sells for her opponents. And I think like, that's just, it's rare. It's just something that you don't see. So like, I genuinely love her. So I love her because she does both sides. Like she plays the sports entertainment side by doing that broad character. And she does that broad character really well. And again, my wife, I use my wife as the barometer for a lot of this stuff. Like my wife adores her to death, just absolutely adores her. But at the same time, she puts on banger matches. Like her matches are really good. I think she does. I think she's one of the best female wrestlers at AEW. I think she really does.
Oh, for sure.
Consistently puts on just the best matches over and over and over and over again. So I think like aside from the story stuff, like that always gets me a lot of slack for her. But the stuff with Mina, like it's an actual, like the stuff they did with Mina was like an actual moving emotional story for me. Like it really genuinely was like, this is like a complicated, I think it's more complicated than anything. Like, I think it's more textured, especially considering she's a cartoon character. Like that Toni is essentially just a broad cartoon character. I think that story was more complicated, had more detail work, and had more like emotional content than anything the WWE has done in years. Like it really, really, like, I mean, even comparing it to the, like the Liv Morgan stuff that they're doing right now, which I think is really fun and pretty sophisticated. Like the Toni Storm stuff blows it out of the water. And that's without even getting into the fact that it's, you know, queer, which doing a queer storyline on a wrestling show, which again is the other part of like where the hate comes from that I saw just from posts, like 50% of it is because it's gay, you know? So like the fact that they're doing all that stuff, I think is like, that's the stuff where I'm like, come on, I'm rooting for AEW to succeed because it takes balls to do stuff like that. And for how progressive and how much everybody loves Triple H, like that's not a story that they're going to do at the WWE, you know,
not everybody. So what I really liked about this, and I think this is what worked, is that she's been such a cartoon character at first, because Toni Storm's always been really good. And I think she's had a very interesting character arc since coming into this company, right? The whole thing with the Outcast, I think it's all kind of helped shape this actual character. Right. And it was so over the top at first, and they pulled back a lot of the really over the text. Remember, she used to wrestle as Black and White, and she was just wrestling as the character. Like, she was not doing a lot of her cool wrestling stuff for a long time when establishing this new character. Now we've slowly kind of worked real Toni Storm back in while establishing this new character, which, as we all agree, was a super cartoon, which the juxtaposition of last night's ultra violence, like Mariah May went Magnum TA on her and she was jamming that shoe into her head, which I also appreciate them saying, watch out for the shoe for 6 months. And then she hit her with the shoe. I'm like, holy shit, way to deliver. She didn't watch out for the shoe. Perfect. That's awesome. I can't say enough good things, but I think the ridiculousness played so well to when Toni Storm bled. Like, I mean, Moxley's at home going, man, that's a good gusher she got there. Like, this is why that works so well. Because, like, again, like Brian bled last night. It's like, oh, Brian bleeds all the time. And I love it. Don't get me wrong. I love blood and wrestling. But seeing Toni do it was like a tad grotesque. And like, it really like surprised me that they went so hardcore with it. Like, Mariah was whipping her with a championship belt. I can't remember the time off the top of my head that somebody was whipping somebody with a title belt. Like, it was so, the stark violence just stood in such complete juxtaposition to everything else they've done, which in my mind just sealed the freaking deal. Like, I'm all in on this. It's so much better than I realize. But again, when you go back and look at everything they've done, they stuck the landing on this. Now, of course, we got a lot more work to go from here, but what a moment.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And I like what Joshua brought up, where he was talking about the gay aspect of the storyline pissed a lot of people off and probably offended some fragile egos. Well, the blood on Toni Storm last night offended some fragile white people, specifically males of a demographic. They took to Twitter. They were pretty upset that she was bleeding. And I want to tell all you guys, go fuck yourselves.
That was awesome. I agree.
I think that story is great. One of the things that was perplexing to me, and I'm not saying I don't like it, because I can't not like something that Bryan Danielson does. But in the lead up to the finale of the Owen Hart tournament last night, I think he talked to Sports Illustrated. So he's not like talking to some rando like podcast, Mike and JD show bullshit. He's talking to like big wigs out there and said that he has basically like, he doesn't think that he deserves the title, really didn't have a whole lot of interest in the title, was pretty apathetic to the whole deal. And so I'm like, okay, well, you know, it would make sense for Hangman to win here because Hangman wants it really bad. They have the feud. The reason why, you know, he cut that beautiful promo on Monday with the blood all over his face, like this is perfect. And then turns out it was just a big swerve, and Bryan Danielson is going to be heading to All In, like we assumed originally that he's going to do to face Swerve. What do you guys think about this? And do you put the title on Danielson at this point?
Go ahead, Josh.
I mean, it sure seems like you put the belt on him, doesn't it? Like, the end of All In, it's going to be the last match, dramatically speaking, right? Like, so if you think about it from like what makes it like, what's the biggest moment, Swerve retaining doesn't feel like the celebration. It's everybody standing there pumping their fists chanting yes, right? Like, that just feels like that's the image. Yeah. And, you know, look, Tony Khan doesn't always do the image, but like, dude's trying to sell out 100,000 seats. You know, he's got to do something. And it's like, when you're trying to do that and you know, like, he wants to do it again next year. So like, you sort of have to, there's certain things that you have to kowtow to. Like, you have to satisfy your audience, and you have to make them happy. And so it feels like there's no way for him not to win, because what it nets for Swerve in terms of him like looking like a badass for winning doesn't outweigh the bad feeling of he's retiring and didn't win. You know, I mean, maybe it's like him getting his retirement, like that he's retiring is enough that people will be all excited, but it like Rocky losing at the end of Rocky only works because it's not that he lost, it's that he survived. Right? Like, that's why it matters. So if they manage to somehow build Swerve up to the point in the next, you know, 4 weeks that we think that Swerve is literally going to murder him in the ring, then him not winning will be enough of an ending. But otherwise, I think he kind of needs to win for it to feel real.
I love Bryan Danielson. He's one of my all-time favorite wrestlers. I adore his work, character work and in-ring work. He makes weird choices sometimes, though. Going on all these media tours and saying, I don't want the title, I shouldn't have the title, it seems like it's promotional malpractice. Like, yes. You're trying to sell me a ticket. Like you said, they got to sell this gigantic stadium in London. Like, I want to hear, and I got into an argument with our buddy, not an argument, but a debate with our good buddy Sam Shipman on this mic. And I'm like, well, promotionally, I want the guy shooting for the title to say, I need this belt. Like what Hangman did. I need this. It drives me. I'm obsessed with it. Like, I want to feel that my hero, or, you know, the protagonist is invested in this, that he's working towards something. I don't know about it. I mean, like, he caught a really good promo after Dynamite this week, which, of course, was, again, not on the television show. So I feel weird about how we're getting into this to begin with. But that being said, now that we're here, I feel like Brian's got to win. I feel like Swerve might have to, like, trip, and they might have to do, like, a reverse Montreal here and, like, trick Brian into winning the title. Right, like, because he's always, here's the problem, like you say, Rocky does lose, but it's the work that he put in, it's the journey, we get there, you know, we earn that moment. Here's the problem, Brian always loses the big match. Yeah. Brian's story in this company is he constantly loses, and he, like, wants to do it, he wants to put everyone over. Yeah, he's like, he's almost too giving, like, he's almost like too good a dude in real life, right? I need him to be a little selfish here and, like, give us that big crescendo. Because here's the thing, Mike, where's Dynasty at this year?
Dynasty?
Was it Dynasty? Isn't that the late show?
Wrestle Dream. It's in the Tacoma Dome.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Wrestle Dream, Tacoma Dome.
And that's that's Swerve and Hang, and that's Swerve and Bryan's home, both of them Washington. So you could have the rematch in Washington, and people are gonna be all fired up when Swerve wins again, like, wins the next time around.
Yeah.
But I think, like Josh says, like, I think they need them. I think the company needs that moment, right? I think the AEW title lineage needs Bryan Danielson on there. Like, I think we all kind of, and it's not a knock against Swerve, but I think that if Swerve loses and then beats Bryan, I think that helps solidify him more than anything else. Like, again, I have my inner Dave Meltzer, you know, itching away at me saying this promotional malpractice to have Bryan say, no, I really don't want the title. And then why the hell am I watching the show? If you don't want to watch the damn title, if you don't want to win the champion, what's the point? So I think we as fans, I think the promotion, I think everybody needs it, even if Brian doesn't think it's the best idea. Like, I think Swerve just needs to fall down and pull him on top and do a fast count. Like, do whatever it takes. Put that belt on.
Yeah, do a reverse Montreal. Hold on, we got a super chat from my Glassdoor Gamer. Oh, said, hey, TK, as an ECW, I think he said, as an ECW fan, is going to Terry Funk, ECW Danielson. So basically, like, force the title on Bryan Danielson. Because Terry Funk, the ECW title was worthless until Terry Funk held the belt, right?
100%.
And then he legitimized the title. And then that became a, like, you know, third tier, but it became a big title at that point, mm-hmm. because it had Terry Funk's name on it. When we looked at the brackets, we were looking at it, and Bryan Danielson was the first name that we thought should win. And we said this exact same scenario, that he should go in all in, should get the Wembley Stadium, get the victory, and then flip it back to Swerve. Now, we said all this, flip back to Swerve at the Tacoma Dome. We said all this before Forbidden Door. I think Forbidden Door was Swerve's coming out party.
It was great.
More so than winning the title from Samoa Joe, because I felt like that was a cold title win. I completely 100% agree with Josh about the Christian Cage feud. While it ended up being a good feud, I didn't find it to be important. I didn't think that it needed to happen.
They didn't tell us it was important.
I wasn't dying to see it. But you have two really good performers in Christian Cage, an all-time performer. They somehow made it interesting at the end, but they didn't make it important. I felt the Ospreay match was important. They were the two biggest stars on the show at Forbidden Door by far. And he came away, and I thought he was a made man. I think I'm at the point now, with all the stuff that Danielson has said, that he doesn't really want the title. I don't know that you take it off Swerve just yet. I think you just keep plugging away at it. and you give him the victory to go over an all-time legend like Bryan Danielson. So this isn't a brace for debate thing, because arm can be twisted a little bit on this one to go lean towards Danielson, but I think right now, you put a gun to my head, I say keep it on Swerve for right now.
Oh, difference of opinion. I like it. We haven't done that in a while.
Yeah.
I do wonder if some of it, because Danielson is so, he's so into kayfabe and going around, like how he manipulates the media. Like, I wonder how much of it is him trying to set expectations that he is going to lose.
I think you're right.
Right. Yeah. So that he can win. So that mm-hmm. when he wins, it's actually has
a
that
surprise.
So it feels like a surprise because everyone's mm-hmm. not expecting it. Because I think everyone is expecting him to win. And it's like, I have to try and give some illusion of of surprise. I don't want to be surprised. I want the thing to happen. You know,
I think it kind of worked this week though, because I don't think any of us expected Paige to lose. Like yeah. I was in the stadium last week in Chicago, right? I posted a video, Mike and JD Show Patreon, me and my little buddy hanging out at Dynamite last week. So when Paige showed up and beat the ever living shit out of Jeff Jarrett, loved it. I thought for sure we're gonna get Swerve and Hangman in London. So I was surprised. I mean, I think Mike and I both figured, oh, we didn't see this coming. Probably should have. Right. Cause yeah. We talked about it on the show. So I think maybe Josh, you got a good point there. Maybe this is like the reverse work, if you will, yeah. Like, you know, I can't win. I shouldn't be the champ, you know, kind of what Punk was doing, but you know, Punk
even the, even him talking about retiring, it's the same thing, right? Like if he just keeps saying like, well, I'm going to retire anyways, and I'm going to be done. This is it for me. And like, how could I be a champion? I'm retiring. It's like, well, yeah, you're going to retire as you're going to become the champion. You're going to have a championship run. And then you get to have the like retirement match, essentially. It's like, cause this isn't a retirement match. If he was going to be retired, I think they would make it a retirement match.
Allow me to.
That's the money, you know, you're like, that's where the money is.
I agree with you. And I'm going to quote I'm going to give you my favorite Bryan Danielson quote right now. Lying is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. Yeah. I just felt like this lie missed the mark. I think it made me lose a little bit interest in his journey by him saying that. Now, the fact of the matter is he is one of the most amazing performers I've ever seen. So they immediately got me back into it. Like the guy is gigging himself. And Jeff Jarrett was amazing in that match, by the way, coming, sliding to Danielson's head and then sliding away to around the corner to block the camera so when Danielson could run the razor across his head. I thought that was brilliant. Yes, I noticed, but I've also been watching for 35 years, so I can notice stuff like that. I thought he was brilliant. All right, next topic. I actually have a whole slate of topics, and we've been focusing on all the AEW stuff. I think the biggest story of the week so far, or at least the biggest story as of yesterday anyway, is the fact that WWE signed Stephanie Vaquer, CMLL star. I thought she was the standout performer in all of Forbidden Door, to be honest. I thought she came out of there this is the hottest star right now that is probably going to land on the American scene. And sure enough, AEW and WWE were both after her, and WWE won out. What do you guys think about Stephanie Vaquer going to WWE? Josh, you go first.
I mean, I know there was speculation online that she saw, and that, you know, from everybody who hates AEW, there was speculation that she saw how AEW is run and decided like, I'm going to go to the other place. But I think it's hard. I think it's hard to turn WWE down right now. I mean, it's just like the place is printing money. You know, they're like, they have a system in place to train you and get you going. They have a track record of like just taking and making excellence out of people. And I think they offered her so much money. Like, I don't know how you say no to it. I don't know that they're going to do her right, but it's also like AEW's overloaded with talent right now, mm-hmm. with female talent in particular. So like, I don't know where you put her in the lineup to actually give her room to do anything. Cause I feel like their women's division doesn't get, for how great it is, doesn't get as much time as it probably should.
It's getting better, but yeah,
it is getting better, but like they don't have, there's not as much time. Like Willow should be on TV every week for a substantial amount of time for how over she is and how good she is on the mic and all that stuff. And she's not, like, it's weird. It's a weird choice. So like if somebody who's that good on the mic and that charismatic and that over doesn't get time, it's like, well, somebody who English is her second language, it's you're running a risk, you know? Whereas at least in WWE, she's going to get trained to their style because that's how they're designed. So it feels like it's just the way to go. It's like the safer bet, especially because she's older, right? Like she's been doing this for 31. A while. Yeah. So, I mean, she's not 20. So it's like, you take the surefire money. That's going to get you going. Like I look at it. I think it's like, as I get older, it's like you take the safe bet because you never know how long you're going to be doing this before it all just caves in.
A lot of people realize that if they go get that WWE money, that WWE fame, when they eventually fire you, you're going to make good money on the indies with your WWE money and WWE fame. JD, you had something. Go ahead.
Well, it didn't hurt Mystico. Like he came back to CMLL just fine after his failed WWE run. I get where this whole thing is coming from. I think that she's always wanted to go to WWE. That's the end goal. I get why she's there. I think it makes sense. I think that I hope they don't sand her edges down too much because she's really good. The first time I got to see her was when she worked that New Japan show in Chicago. And I texted you and John Muse. I'm like, she's really good. Like this is she. I didn't realize that Stephanie DeKira was this good. So I'm excited that she's got some opportunity. Where I get a little on this is she doesn't speak English very well. And WWE struggles to make stars out of non-English speakers.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm kind of like, that being said, I don't know if AEW is the right route. Either AEW would have, if she's with AEW, she would have been still doing stuff in CMLL. And I don't, it seems like that relationship had kind of reached its end. A lot of that is, you know, her personal stuff. And all people say, oh, she probably wouldn't want to go to AEW because Roosh is friends with her boyfriend. I'm like, oh, well, who's Roosh's brother? Like Dragon Lee's right there in WWE. I'm sure not a whole lot of difference. So like, you know, 50-50. If her plan is to go into NXT and just beat the shit out of all those gymnasts, okay, now I'm on board. That's going to look cool because she's got such a different, unique style that I hope they don't take away. Because sometimes they do this. Like I point back at Kenta. Like Hideo Itami was not cool. Whereas Kenta is pro wrestling's like legendary asshole. Like, you know, they just was lost in translation. So I hope that they're able to keep what makes Stephanie Vakir cool over there. But I do think it's probably the better move for like financially and just career wise. I totally understand her jumping on board. Our buddy John Muse, I was texting him about that. And, you know, he had some really cool thoughts about what they can do with Stephanie Vakir and WWE. And he was real excited about it. And I had to poo poo on that, be like, man, they struggle getting foreigners over. Remember when Nakamura signed, we're all like, oh my God, this is the guy, perennial Hall of Fame, like perennial main event, or this guy, this is a can't miss. And yeah, he's been fine.
Yeah. And Andrade is the speed champion. So he gets to wrestle 3 minutes a week on Twitter. And then you go down the line, Dragon Lee, what's Dragon Lee up to? He was in a tag match on main event this week, I think. And so a lot of guys that struggle to speak, guys and girls that struggle to speak English don't really get an opportunity. Now, if she buckles down and works on the English, I think that she absolutely has everything. She's tailor-made for WWE. And the fact that she's a little bit older, I don't think it's going to hurt her at all because she doesn't look like she's in her 30s like at all. No. She's a great looking person. God bless her. I'm 10 years older than her, and I look 20 years older than her. So good for her. But
yes, you do.
I think this whole thing wait a minute, JD. But you know, the way this whole thing went down, you guys are going to be shocked to hear this. WWE decided to be a little bit shady in their dealings, and they got her to forego her upcoming bookings in New Japan and Red Pro. And also, it looks like, you know, Tony Khan has a little bit of egg on his face, because the reason why they're coming after Stephanie Vakir is because Tony Khan put her on the show, which is what happened with Dragon Lee. So and Tony Khan wasn't able to seal the deal, and you know, now there's, you know, what's his name, Lucha Blog and Rob Viper and the other kind of like the Lucha Libre bloggers that are out there, they're kind of talking like, you know, CMLL might eventually get timid because of the situation, which is what happened to them before. Whenever they started to let their stars work in the United States, they started to get plucked, and they were missing dates and all this and that. I think this has far-reaching effects into Mexico. I think it has far-reaching effects into AEW's partnerships, because WWE is coming after AEW's partners, right? And we saw today, earlier, Shingo Takagi from New Japan, who was just had a five-star match, in my opinion, with Bryan Danielson and Forbidden Door, already tweeting about Stephanie Bakura, and he would like to go see her in Orlando coming up here pretty soon.
I thought he was trying to shoot his shot. You know, that's what that's how I read that tweet.
Well, yeah.
Like, here's the thing, though. And I saw some of those pro guys being like, oh, don't worry, Shingo would never leave New Japan. It's like, well, let me tell you about a little company called Dragon Gate.
Yes.
Like, here's the thing about that, though. It's like, I really feel like Shingo's kind of topped out in New Japan. Like, they put a title on him, and they kind of like said, okay, we're not really going to go all in with Shingo. So at this point in Shingo's career, if he wanted to go to WWE, I don't think I wouldn't hold that against him. Again, I'm not even a WWE fan, but I get it. And New Japan's got the young guys that they want to start trying to push. Like, it's time to see what you have in those young guys. It's time to see what you have in your Musketeers. You know, it's time to push your Amores. And I'm drawing blanks on names. I sound like an idiot. But like, it's time for them to go.
Yoda
Tsuji Renderita. Thank you.
Shota Umino.
Like, and here's the thing with like losing Stephanie Vaquera does nothing to CML's business. They are still super hot in Mexico. They're going to sell out Arena Coliseo every week. You know, Mystico ain't going nowhere. Right?
He might eventually.
WWE? I doubt that, Mike.
No, yeah. But I think if you wanted to step out from CMLL, Tony Khan would take him in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing is, if Tony, like we saw with New Japan, Tony he goes with Tony Khan, he can go back and work CMLL whenever they need him.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. And again, he's in his late 30s. He might even be 40 at this point. I would get it if that were to happen. But I mean, like, and this is why you it's better to have some type of a partnership than no type of partnership when you lose guys. Yeah. So I get it.
I wish I loved they started doing with like Nakamura. They started doing it, and they've been doing it with Io Sky a bit. Like, I have no problem with and actually like the subtitling. Like, I think they
me too.
It's just do it, just get it over with. Like, people, we live, especially, and I would guess part of why they signed her in the first place and why they went after her so hard, as we move into the Netflix era, like, they're gonna want more languages, they're gonna want more international. Like, again, having worked for Netflix and seen how they use their algorithms and how they use the sort of like mentality behind how they program, they want international. Like, they want to have as many cultures represented as humanly possible, because what they have is they have data that shows them how successful that is. And what they've found and what they see is that having people speak different languages is not the handicap that it used to be.
Yeah.
And I think that what you probably, the reason why you don't see it, I almost guarantee you, is Universal telling them, yeah, we don't like that. Don't do that. Please don't do that. It bothers us. You know, like, that's pushback from Fox and pushback from USA that they're not going to get from Netflix. So, like, and I'm fascinated. Like, Netflix is a very strange company to work for, and I'm fascinated to see how the WWE does when they get there. And the decisions that they're making now are all about, like, 100% about fitting into Netflix and fitting into Netflix culture. The story I always tell is, you know, when I was working, when I was working for them, is you get a report that tells you it's market research, but it's market research generated by the algorithm, right? So it's not like they've interviewed people, they just use the algorithm to decide stuff. And what they told us was, like, you know, this is the show that your show is most like, and these are the things that show does incredibly well, and these are the things we would like you to emulate of that show.
Man,
And then they said, this is the show that your show has the risk of being most like, that we want you to be the, that we want you to be different from. And these are the ways we want you to be different from it. I don't want to say what the show is, but it was the same show for both cases.
Oh, wow.
That's weird.
And it was the same things that they wanted us to both emulate and not emulate. And we were like, how do you do that? They're like, what do you mean? We're like, well, you said, you know, you want it to be like this kind of story that does this, this, and this, but you also told us specifically not to do this, this, and this. And they're like, well, look, that we're just reporting the data to you. You guys have to interpret it. And it's sort of like, so for a company like WWE that is very data driven and is because of like, they're used to doing it because of merch, right?
Yeah.
Like they're used to looking at how merch drives things, and they're like, merch is number one, and then audience reaction is number two. Like those are the two things that help them determine how they're making big decisions about what they're doing and who they're focusing on. And, you know, like there's always the stuff with John Cena, right? Like they, everybody was booing John Cena, but they didn't give a shit because that guy was selling t-shirts and that's all they cared about. Right. So now imagine what that's like when they have microdata that's telling them to the second when people are pausing, rewinding, when they're watching stuff over and over, and they can see it in like absolute minutia to the second what the reactions are like. WWE is going to be wild. Like what happens to it is going to be insane. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm curious what happens and how they handle it and like how much free hand they actually get and like whether Triple H chows down on it or whether he fights, you know, just sort of trusts himself, you know, like, cause they seem like, it feels now like they're even more sort of data driven than they ever were before. You know, like, look, I mean, the Cody stuff would never have happened under Vince, right? Like we would have had Rock versus Roman for WrestleMania. Like there's no world where they would have ever listened to people. So I'm fascinated to see what happens in that world when things just start wildly switching. And again, like I genuinely think that the hires that you're seeing and how they're doing stuff, even the TNA stuff, like what happens with Joe Hendry, like they're going to pay. Yeah, I'm good. See, look at me do it. They're going to pay a fortune for that guy.
Yeah.
Because he's awesome, because he's awesome, but they're going to pay a fortune for him because he has the favorables. He has the data behind him. And the data is more important than anything else to a company like Netflix. Like that's what they care about.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because we're going to transition to it. Oh, sorry, JD, we're all out of time.
I was getting ready to take my victory lap.
No, I'm just kidding. I'll set you up, JD. Don't worry about it. NXTNA, their partnership has strengthened quite a bit. In fact, Joe Hendry in the main event, and they were teasing him throughout the show. Everybody knew Joe Hendry was going to be in that main event. NXT actually outperformed AEW in the demo this week, which is pretty wild. By a fraction of a point, but they still beat them. So
credit where it's due.
They were able to get them in the demo rating this week. And I think Joe Hendry, and I think the TNA relationship is a part of that, because I think Joe Hendry right now is one of the most like up and coming over guys in professional wrestling. And it's only a matter of time before WWE plucks him away from TNA. We just want his contracts up. Or if TNA decides to let him out of his contract early, which appears to have happened with one Jordan Grace. All right, JD, go ahead.
I told you so. We speculated. We talked about this months ago now.
Yeah.
You were like, hey, Jordan Grace is under contract till 2026. And I said, unless WWE gets her out of it. And you were adamant because your blood runs with TNA. I'm sorry, my friend. You are so a TNA guy at heart.
Well, half of their roster blocks me because of how mean I am to them. So I don't know that that's the case. But
me too. Yeah. Like I'm just as guilty as that. This is why I'm not on Brace for Impact anymore. Like, but here we are. Like it was very obvious they are interested in Jordan Grace, and their word is they're gonna let her out of the contract a little bit early, and she'll transition over to WWE, which makes perfect sense because she's right now the best woman involved in NXT. Might be one of the best women in the main roster when she gets there. Jordan's awesome. And you had a great tweet this week, so I buried you, and I'm going to give you some credit. When you said that TNA is more over in NXT than it is in TNA.
NXT loves everything. And that's why this relationship is working way better than anything that TNA has done before. Now, I know that the AEW thing happened, and they got Kenny Omega, and they popped numbers early on. But this is a more of a mutually beneficial relationship.
Oh, 100%.
And both fan bases are into it. The AEW TNA thing, when they were together, like AEW wanted nothing to do with TNA, and TNA fans had a ton of resentment for AEW accomplishing stuff that TNA was never able to accomplish. So they just didn't click. And also, Tony Khan didn't help matters much when he came onto the air on TNA's television show and completely buried them week after week. And then TNA never got the payoff, which I blame Scott D'Amore. That's Scott D'Amore's fault. He got cuckolded in his own promotion. That's his fault. I don't blame Tony Khan there. But the fan bases didn't jive. AEW snubbed their nose. They were looking down at TNA all the time. Well, that's not happening with this NXT thing. So NXT fans are really excited about TNA coming over to NXT. And anytime a TNA star comes onto that program, the TNA chants are extremely loud. Now, WWE cheats a little bit. Not every person in the audience during NXT is an actual fan. They're wrestlers training, right? And they're being told what to say. And I get the feeling they might be piping a little bit of crowd noise, but it sounds pretty awesome, and they do a great job. So that's exactly why I said that. But what I will say is, on the TNA show since the Chicago shows from a few weeks ago, and that's carried over into Philadelphia, as a result of this NXT relationship, they're sold out, right? They actually sold more tickets in Chicago for Against All Odds a couple weeks ago than they did for Bound for Glory last year that featured Will Ospreay. They actually pushed the building capacity to 1,200. They oversold the building, which they've never been able to do before. So let's just say that it's a mutually beneficial relationship. But it's going to happen where WWE is going to want those TNA stars as they see how over they are on TNA programming. The first domino to fall is Jordynne Grace, and it's only a matter of time before they take Joe Hendry too. And you know what? All you can do is be like, you know what? I'm happy for him. It's like, because I think Joe Hendry is going to be a multimillionaire.
Oh, he's fit. He fits so perfectly into what they do. I'm getting 84 flashbacks when I look at what's happening at TNA. Like, they're just going to, how are they not going to take what they want? And then what is TNA left with? Because they don't have, a pipeline.
It's WWE TNA. Look, AEW and WWE are in a war, right? And they need to constantly refresh their roster. And so if you're a smaller company or you're a regional company and your stars start to get hot and their contracts are due, the top two companies are going to bid for them and they're going to take them. With TNA and WWE being a partnership, they can do that in a more smooth fashion than what WWE used to do to them, which is just pluck them out. And they legitimately poached TNA. I have a specific example: Karrion Kross, Killer Kross. What they did with Killer Kross is Killer Kross knew he had an NXT deal waiting for him when he was working for Impact, and so that dude went to the sheets. Went to the media, did everything he could to get out of his TNA contract because he knew he had that deal on the back end, and he was bad-mouthing the company, said everything under the sun that he could say, and they made him sit home for 6 months. They eventually let him out of his contract, and day one he was in NXT. That's called poaching. That is a poaching maneuver right there. But now, you know, WWE probably gave TNA a little something on the back end, like, hey, we really want Jordynne. You know, she's outgrown your company. She's been there for 6 or 7 years. She's won that title too many times. She's headlined pay-per-views. She ain't got nothing else to do there anymore. We're gonna take her. Let's work out a deal here. And I think that's what happened with them.
I mean, she feels out of place there. Like, when I watch, I'm not a super loyal TNA fan. Like, TNA is in my like dead zone of fandom, almost entirely. Like, I just missed it. Like, it existed during the window when I didn't watch, so I don't know it. But you know, I've been watching it the past few months, and I feel like she feels out of place. Like, she feels like a WWE superstar.
She's a Ferrari in a trailer park right now.
Yeah. And so it sort of makes sense that she's going to go. And I think, like, Joe Hendry, it's funny to watch Joe Hendry between the two shows the production value of NXT makes him look like the superstar that he is. And yeah. You see it and it's like, I wish, and again, this is the producer in me watching it, is like what TNA, if TNA was smart, what they would be taking out of this deal is not the talent, right? Because they're not getting the A-list talent from NXT, right? They're just sort of getting whoever's kind of around.
They're getting the no quarter catch crew, which decent enough talent, but they're not big name.
Right. What they should be taking is the production know-how.
Yeah.
Because those TV, like NXT, for being made in essentially the same space, right? Like they're being made in rooms that are the same size. They're being made on roughly the same budget. It's probably maybe a little bit more, but technically it's probably a little bit less because it's a standing set. So they don't have to build it every time, but like they're essentially putting on the same shows, right? Like they're putting on virtually the same shows, but the quality of the show, just the actual physical production of an of a WWE NXT show is so slick and so good and looks like a show. I just rely on my wife for everything. Like we were watching it tonight and my wife was like, what is wrong? Like what looks wrong with the show? And all I could say is like, well, it's TNA. Like this is what TNA looks like.
TNA is in the ECW arena tonight and it was a packed house. I think the video production, I'll be honest, if you watched the show 3 months ago, you would say that the show this week looked way better than it did 3 months ago.
It does.
They fired their director, Dave Sahadi. They sent his ass to MLW. They hired a new director, and like they're actually white balancing the cameras. The audio.
That's what I was
going to
say. Are we white balancing finally?
Yeah. They are. They're color correcting. And the video is clear. And some of the movie shots that they're doing backstage look way better than they did 3 months ago. So they have made some improvements. And my buddy BQ, who does a TNA podcast, said they need to work really hard to look more like NXT and less like MLW. And they're inching their way to that. NXT has the advantage. They got WWE right behind them. But they also is that they're on a soundstage essentially there on the PC, which is what TNA is trying to get to later this year with the rumored move to Full Sail University. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't hit my bit. Nobody comments on my hairline. Hold on.
Oh, here we go.
All right. Now I got my tinfoil hat on, gentlemen, and I wanted JD. I got my tinfoil hat on. I have a conspiracy, and you guys are gonna want to hear this. I think this whole WWE TNA thing. Because they put over Joe Hendry huge last night. I have never seen WWE, even when they worked with ECW in the past, they never put a smaller company star in the main event of their television show and had him get the victory and put him in a position to look more like a star than their top star on that show. Joe Hendry came off like a bigger star than Trick Williams on Trick Williams' own show, right? He absolutely did. And he got the pin over the legendary Sean Spears. All right. Okay. But he got the pin over Sean Spears. I think WWE is trying to build up TNA to try to take away from AEW's audience. I absolutely think that's happening. There is no reason for them to try to build up TNA the way that they're doing, to put over their stars the way they're doing. I know they're eventually going to take over. They're going to take Joe Hendry. I don't think they're taking Trey Miguel and Zach Wentz, who were also on the show last night. I don't think they're taking those guys. They already had Zach Wentz at one point, and they fired him. And I think there's more stars coming from TNA. They're being announced from TNA. They're promoting TNA. I think this is a big game to try to take away from AEW.
I'll play ball with you a little bit. I would work.
Are you trying to have a serious conversation with me wearing this hat? Is that going to,
I'm committed to this freaking gimmick. We are all in here.
I've been wanting to do this for a long time, by the way.
I'm very proud of you. We've been workshopping that for a long time, and it actually came off pretty good. I would be on board with you if TNA had an audience that was that was remotely close to AEW's. Like, you're getting the TNA fans. And, dude, believe me, this show, Josh, this show when it started was called Brace for Impact. It was a TNA Impact podcast. That's how we started out.
Taylor Wilde. You can get the T-shirt now.
You get the t-shirt now. The Taylor Wilde famously broke me when she was playing with tarot cards on the ring apron, and I lost my mind on this podcast a couple years back. So we converted to what they are now. So if TNA had an audience, TNA's got a bigger audience now with NXT than it ever has. And it's not, they're not picking off AEW fans. They're adding TNA fans, which we know are remarkably loyal,
yeah.
Right? Remarkably loyal fans. I think they're just getting more WWE fans interested. This is their answer to a Forbidden Door situation, right? And it does make wrestling more interesting, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But I don't think, working with TNA necessarily hurts their fan, but it hurts AEW at all. Mainly because AEW fans hate TNA and still do the LOL TNA thing.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, no. So look, I got two things. Well, first of all, like AXS, just because they're on AXS, that hurts the theory. Yeah. On the one hand, right? Because that thing, I mean,
who has
it? Yeah, I have a lot of cable in this house. There's a lot of cable, different versions of cable, different streaming services, and I do not have AXS. Like, I had to get their streaming service. I will point out their streaming service is put out by Endeavor.
There you go. Bingo. I was going to bring that up.
It does own TKO.
Yeah.
Which is a weird, that is very suspicious. I don't know. Like, it does, it is like weirdly, philanthropic of WWE.
Yeah.
Not like them.
It is not like them.
Yeah. I don't want to say that they're not getting something out of it because TNA has been a boost to NXT, but yes, go ahead.
I will say the reason to put Joe Hendry over is if you spend any time on TikTok, on Instagram, on YouTube Shorts, on any of them, there is literally no way to look at wrestling content to not hear that song.
Yeah.
Every second or third slide. Like, he is the most over thing in the world. Like, forget the Wyatt Six, right? Like, who cares? Everybody has that song. It's like one of the most popular backgrounds on TikTok. Like, it's everywhere. So, like, it makes sense to put him over because those clips are going to go mega viral more than anything with Trick ever will.
Yeah.
Like, and Trick is great. I like think Trick is real talented. But like the thing with him and the, I don't know if you saw, there was the clip of him and Trick where they Trick goes to give him a fist bump and he goes to shake his hand.
Yeah.
Delightful. But like, I guarantee you more people saw that than anything Trick has ever done in his entire life because Joe Hendry's in it. So like the service of doing of that is worth putting him over and like getting that guy to fly from Scotland to come do one night and be like, and we'll put you over. It's like, well, all right. It seems like I'll do it. I'm in. So like, I think there's so much value. I think he brings specifically in like way more like Jordynne Grace. I think they genuinely just like they see her and they're like, oh, it's like China 2.0 or possibly 3.0. You know, like she's junior China essentially, right? Like they see her look, they see like what they can do with her. They get her as like, that's a brand we can invest in, that we can do something with. I think Joe Hendry, they're like, oh no, that's a guy who's going to actually, he brings value to us rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's a lot of why they put so much behind him.
Well, I think, yeah, Joe Hendry, he has such a huge social media following. His song with number one at one point in different parts of the world. I think in like the UK, it was like number one for a little bit, like worldwide, yeah. Number six. So he has his own brand, his own audience. I think as far as like a long lasting star, I think Jordynne Grace is probably somebody that you can get behind longer term. You know, with Joe Hendry, you wonder when the meme is going to wear off and if he's going to improve his wrestling skills to be a top guy. I will say his last couple matches in TNA has shown me that at least in TNA, he can be their top star by far. I think he's just good enough in the ring to be able to do that for TNA. I think he has some more work to do if he's going to ever get there with WWE. And we're getting ready to close up shop, and I'm going to do a little teaser for Brace for Impact this weekend on patreon.com/ The Mike and JD Show. I'll be live on our Patreon. A former WWE executive is now the chief revenue officer for Anthem Sports, overseeing Invicta and TNA. And they just got Invicta, a new television deal with CBS Sports Network. Kind of a smaller channel still, but bigger than Access. I have it here, and I didn't know I had it, but I have it now. And he was on a podcast earlier this week, and he said that he's actively working on getting TNA a new television deal to increase their distribution, because that has been one of the big barriers for them. I think the biggest barrier has been their production quality, but obviously being on Access is not doing them any favors. So if they can upgrade the production, upgrade the television at the same time, they could do some damage. Could they do dynamite ratings? Not a fucking chance, but they can do some pretty good stuff. So,
and that's okay.
Yeah. That's okay. People were hitting me up saying, hey, if they get on CBS, could they beat Dynamite? I'm like, well, A, they're not going to get on CBS, but yeah. B, anybody could beat Dynamite if they're on CBS, but they're not going to get on CBS. But I think they could probably upgrade their channel that they're on, and WWE won't be a barrier to that. They're not going to actively sabotage it the way that they did it to MLW, because they just lost money in that lawsuit. So, in fact, they may even be more helpful now that they're already in business with them, with TNA Plus, you know, with Endeavor leading TNA Plus. But, hey, guys, we went way over. So we're gonna call it a night. Josh, I want you to get your plugs out here, man. And let us know where everybody can watch your show.
You can go. I put out stuff like 3 times a week. Plus, I'm doing like podcasty review things at Wrestling with Story at YouTube, and Wrestling with Story on Instagram. I put out shorts and like little cut up versions of it. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Josh Fialkov.
Awesome, awesome. Well, hey guys, that is going to do it for us this week. Thank you so much, chat. I love you guys. I am sorry that I did not get to your. To get to your chats tonight, but we are way over. It's way past JD's bedtime. Josh, are you on the West Coast or the East Coast?
I'm on the West Coast. This is like nice and early for me.
I'm in Hawaii, so it's like 7 right now. So I'm wide awake. But
I'm a teacher in the summer, man. I'm fine.
We're good. Okay. All right. But hey, everybody, go to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. Make sure you give us a thumbs up. Make sure you're a subscriber. And as always, go ahead and check out our friend Josh. And that's going to do it for us this week. And until next week, mahalo.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen. No way. From the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A game. Better bring.
This season, Instacart has your back to school. As in, they've got your back to school lunch favorites like snack packs and fresh fruit. And they've got your back to school supplies like backpacks, binders, and pencils. And they've got your back when your kid casually tells you they have a huge school project due tomorrow. Let's face it, we were all that kid. So first call your parents to say, I'm sorry. And then download the Instacart app to get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes all school year long. Get a $0 delivery fee for your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Save on O'Reilly Brake Parts Cleaner. Get 2 cans of O'Reilly Brake Parts Cleaner for just $8. Valid in-store only at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.